You're listening to TIP.
Hey everyone, welcome to this Wednesday's release of the Bitcoin Fundamentals Podcast. On today's show, I have Bitcoin Layer 2 Lightning expert Jesse Schrader on the show to talk about all the fascinating stuff they have going on with their Amboss website. Amboss is a website that analyzes all the Bitcoin full nodes and immediately settling channels that are open between the nodes on the network. Jesse has some exciting metrics and an announcement relating to his company providing an open market for liquidity providers that can now receive income for providing such liquidity services. This is a really fascinating chat that really makes a person think about the implications for risk-free rates and finance at large. So with that said, here's my chat with Mr. Jesse Schrader.
You're listening to Bitcoin Fundamentals by the Investors Podcast Network. Now for your host, Preston Pysh.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Jesse Schrader, and Jesse, super pumped to have this conversation. We've bumped into each other here and there at various conferences. I've been a user of Amboss for a few years now and love the site. And it's fitting that we finally have this conversation to talk about what you're working on. So welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Preston. And super happy to be here. And share what we've been working on. Your podcast is legendary. And also the reason of so much traffic to Amboss was, you know, because you spun up a node way back in the day.
Man, I was just
a dream to be able to talk to you.
I was just learning, and you guys had such a sleek interface, you know, like the other things that are out there to like connect with other nodes. I mean, it felt a little bit like I was programming in Terminal, which I clearly can't do. I'm pretty clueless. I run an Umbral. So I need the turnkey node solution. And you guys had like this just amazing site to connect nodes. So bravo to you guys. Here's where I want to, Jesse, this is where I want to start. Take us back to Lightning when it was just being stood up. Like you came into Bitcoin, what was it, 2016 timeframe, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, I got into Bitcoin in 2017, really.
2017. And, okay.
Yeah, got pretty excited about the number going up. And then, of course, the number started going down. And that's when I really dove in to figure out what it is that I actually bought. And, you know, part of my excitement was buying gifts and like with Bitcoin. And I paid just crazy high fees. After experiencing that, that really pushed me into, okay, how do I pay less in fees, because really I was paying like $60 for a single transaction. And that was just a crazy time for Bitcoin transactions. And that pushed me into Lightning.
Before you were a Bitcoiner, you have this interesting background in legal services and specifically with class action lawsuits for overdraft fees, predatory loans, identity theft. What did that experience kind of prepare you for, and how has some of that experience kind of leaked over into what you're doing right now with designing this whole new financial system, global financial system?
From the legal services background, most of that was in class action lawsuits. Really, I was there as a temp worker, you know, answering phones, reading from a script, and just reading to the people who called. You know, what was the class action lawsuit that the callers were involved in? And, you know, the first case they put me on was about overdraft fees, where banks and like one particular bank, but really all the banks did this. They would reorganize debit card transactions in highest to lowest dollar order. And the consequence of that was that the bank could charge more overdraft fees to a customer because they had more overdraft fees when their bank account balance was zero, if they switched around the order of it. Like there were tons of cases that went through that building. You know, there's a whole section dedicated to Wells Fargo, as well as, you know, other identity, like security breaches. The Target issue happened through there, where every Target customer that had a debit card transaction between several years, their information was leaked. So that was kind of laying the groundwork of letting me know that there's some real problems with our payments infrastructure. Even if you're talking about just debit cards before you get into credit. Of course, like in the building, there was also like mortgage lending discrimination, et cetera. But really, it was a huge learning moment for me about payments.
Mm. Back to your start in Bitcoin, you met Tony Potdevin is the name, and he was working for ThunderHub. And people just have to realize, like back at this time, 2017, when you two met and Lightning in general, like this was more of a, like people didn't even know if like this was going to work. Like anybody who was dealing in Lightning back in 2017, they weren't dealing with anything like what we've got right now, which are these turnkey solutions with running a node on Umbral or whatever one that you're using. I know for me personally, back in 2017, it was just like a talking point. Like, yeah, you know, in maybe a few years, this will be something that people are actually using or doing. But for now, like you got layer one and maybe there's a scaling solution. So tell it to us from your point of view when you met Tony and like what it was that you guys thought you were going to do with Amboss.
Yeah. So early days of Lightning was just a couple of Telegram groups where some folks that were wanting to experience Lightning were getting together and say, I'll open a channel to you. Maybe you can open a channel to me. And like this was like the reckless days. That hashtag reckless was all over the place because Lightning was very experimental at that stage. Now, as we're experimenting with these things and L&D is improving, which is like one of the main implementations of Lightning, as that was improving, it became more and more comfortable. So then there was a size limit for Lightning channels that was part of like the initial setup just to like protect users from funds. But really, I got connected with some of the early tool builders. And one of those was Tony Potdevin. And he was building ThunderHub, which he had built in a hackathon. And when he built that, that was like an actual user interface that I could understand. You know, I'm not a wizard when it comes to working in command line. And, you know, I know a couple of commands just enough to be dangerous, but putting together a user interface for Lightning was so important. I got connected with Tony, sent him a few suggestions, and he saw me helping early Lightning users out in the chat, just, you know, how to get ThunderHub set up, how to navigate the interface, like what opening a channel was, what's sending a payment, what's receiving a payment. These types of basic pieces, as well as like setting up channel backups. So those early tools, like us getting together was pretty important. You know, me on the more social side, and then Tony, who's like just a ruthless tool builder that iterates really quickly.
It's crazy to me to think that, you know, like I use ThunderHub whenever I was, every channel I've ever opened, I've opened it through ThunderHub. And for me as a non-programmer, like it was an intimidating interface. But if when I take a step back and I think about, well, what would it be if I didn't have that interface to use to even open channels? And I don't even know how that would be possible without an interface like ThunderHub. So he's the guy that literally designed ThunderHub and made it possible so that I can go to another node. Just for people that haven't run their own full node, let me just describe it to you real easily. So I run a full node. I go and I can go to Amboss, a website that literally indexes all the people that are running full nodes. And I can find basically their IP address, or it'd be like your mailing address if you were going to mail a letter to somebody. I can find this mailing address for other nodes that I want to connect to. And whenever I connect to them, I'm opening a channel with Satoshis, Bitcoin, then can be routed back and forth to each other. And there's a whole bunch of people that are doing this between the nodes. And the only way you can find other people is you got to have some type of global index that people can reference. And that's what Amboss is. And then ThunderHub is where you would go to actually open these channels and say, this is the address, this is how much I want to open, and do it in the next block. This is the fee that I'm willing to pay and whatnot. So that's what we're talking about if people are wondering that maybe aren't as intimately familiar with Layer 2. But okay, so you met him in 2019. And so how did you guys, How did you come up with the idea for Amboss? Like, what was it that was driving you to know that there was something here to build?
For early days, there's a big question of like, who do I connect to? What are smart decisions in this new economy that we're creating? I mean, the whole like Lightning Network in general, I mean, you're taking your savings and you're deciding, I'm going to put it in a new format that creates a pathway to another node. And by in so doing, that creates a payment network that operates without credit and without debt. You have to make decisions that are costly. I'm going to make a Bitcoin transaction that's going to create a new pathway. In order to make that decision, especially if the decision is costly, I'm going to need some information. And so that was the main driver behind Amboss. Mm. Like, how do I package all the data together about this network and kind of create a map of it and be able to guide people on how to make a better payment network without credit, without debt, that works really fast, where you could pay next to zero fees. We started indexing the Lightning Network, and there were a couple of tools out there that did something similar. You know, one was like 1ML, and then Fiat Jaff behind Noster, he actually created one of these explorers as well. But the early product was a Lightning Network Explorer, which basically just means all the nodes on the network, we're going to give you a profile page. You can have your name, the color of your node on there. You can have all your different channels listed. And we'll just make a whole bunch of data visualizations to help you understand the data about your node. So that was the main driver. And then figuring out like, oh, okay, we need to start organizing node operators using markets.
I would think that this would just be so overwhelming at the beginning. Was there a point early on where you guys were like, okay, like what in the world are we doing here? Or did it just kind of immediately start clicking and like all the data out there, like you were just a pig in mud? Like walk us through those early days of what this was like.
Figuring out like, okay, how much did I just pay to open a channel? Like, where did the money go? And we know like it's reckless at this point. Like, we're always double checking the node. Like, how do we know that the money is still there?
Yeah.
Because I'm watching my balance and it's changing around. Why is it changing? And like, there's no one that is able to really answer that question for you, because there's like developers that are working on the protocol. Like, how are we supposed to like make safe guardrails for people to help understand like what just happened with their money?
I'm laughing, Jesse, because this is the exact feeling I had when I opened my first channel and I had all these tools at my disposal, and this is how I felt. So I couldn't imagine how everyone felt in the early days without having some type of graphical way to view that the channel's been opened with this other party, right? Like, I could literally see it on your on Amboss and with ThunderHub, and I could see that these things were happening, which you would think would put a person at ease. But the way you were just describing it is, I was just like, did I do it right? Did I just literally like shoot 10 million sats into the ether and they're gone forever? Like, I just didn't have any type of, and there's nobody sitting next to me like while I'm doing this. And it was a little intimidating, but keep going. I want to hear more. Keep going.
Like, what Bitcoin does really well is accounting. Like, you're just keeping track of things. And, you know, my background is environmental engineering. So like, there's going to be flows from one point to another point. Mm-hmm. And it all, at the end of the day, has to all add up. Like, these are the calculations that I'm doing. And in order to like return a profit, you have to have an idea of what kind of funds are you spending. And so I'm having to do that calculation and like checking against my node, making sure that everything lines up, just to give myself comfort. And now with Amboss, like, we're just trying to streamline all of that activity to help people, you know, make better decisions when it comes to using the Lightning Network, so that we can actually create an alternative to traditional payment networks.
Is there any other evolution that you guys have noticed? So you start with basically this data analytics, basically coming up with a footprint of the entire layer two Bitcoin network. As you're trying to operationalize Amboss, like, was there an evolution? Were there any evolutions that happened, or like moments where you're like, hey, maybe we should also be doing these other things? Or did it, have you guys just continued to try to make the original idea just better and better each day?
One piece that we noticed is that people were coming into the Lightning Network, and it was happening faster and faster. So when people joined, they would usually come into the groups and ask, why can't I receive a payment? I want to like send Lightning to my node. And we would just have to tell them, oh, like you can't do that because like you need someone else to open a channel to you. Like, how are the sats going to reach your point B if there's no road that's going there? So really, like, liquidity in Lightning is directional. Because there's no credit and no debt, like, someone has to allocate their savings to you so that you can receive a payment. And we realize that this is a huge user experience problem. That huge problem of acquiring inbound liquidity means that there's a market there. And so what we put together was what we called Magma, where we just created a marketplace where you can log on and look at the different nodes that are willing to open channels to you. And they all have prices there. So you could just, with a simple Lightning payment, be able to buy a channel to your node. Mm-hmm. And your Lightning payment only goes through if they actually open the channel to you. So that's how we set up this marketplace, because like in the early days, I was actually trying to sell channels, say like, oh, okay, you need liquidity. Well, it costs me money. So how much are you going to pay me to open a high quality channel to your node so that you can receive payments? So this is something that I was doing via Telegram, just a simple messaging app. But with Amboss, we're like, hey, we put a company together. Like, let's create a marketplace for this that actually matches up people that have been saving Bitcoin with the people that need to receive payments. Because we know this is going to be huge in the future when we've got people selling goods on Lightning and they want to be able to receive payments and receive those reliably.
You know, for people that are listening to the conversation, most are not running their own node. Most are not tech savvy or really kind of doing the things that the hardcore Bitcoiners are technically doing with their coins and testing and trying these things out. So this is a question that I was going to ask you much further along in the show, but I think it's pertinent to do it right now, just because people that are listening have heard us talk about you need inbound liquidity. You need this technical thing to happen in order for all this to really kind of work. And they're probably thinking to themselves, like, there's just no way that this is going to catch on. But for folks that don't have a layer two wallet, like, you can go and download Wallet of Satoshi, you can go on the Cash app and you can seamlessly use layer one, layer two Bitcoins. You don't even realize which one you're using. It's already seamless to the end user. The UX is completely seamless. For that person, help them kind of understand, I guess, how you see this evolving 5 to 10 years from now. What is the typical user of Bitcoin? Are they don't have to know any of this stuff. Is that a problem that they don't have to understand all this as far as like the centralizing forces? Or do you think that the fact that they have the optionality to do these things if they really want to is enough to make sure that Bitcoin doesn't have any type of attack vector, I think is where I'm really going with the question.
When like the end user uses Lightning, generally right now, they're using custodial wallets. That means that your Bitcoin that you claim is yours is actually being held by someone else. Now, thankfully, like we're in early days of Bitcoin, where, you know, a lot of these developers and wallet creators are our friends. You know, there's not a lot of enemies to Bitcoin and to Lightning right now, but that may not always be the case. Now, to actually take another step and say, I'm not going to trust another company or person, like, I'm going to have to set up my own infrastructure. And that infrastructure is essentially a small server. Now, we've kind of operationalized this a lot. Umbral and Voltage have done, you know, phenomenal jobs at like making running your own server a much easier process. But that is a way to do it and minimize the amount of trust that is going on in payments. What this actually does in effect is like almost sets up a city on a map, and there's going to be highways going between all of these different cities on the map.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Value investing in 2024 is lonely. You listen to the podcast and spend countless hours researching companies, but still feel like something is missing. What it is that you don't have others around you to help accelerate your learning efforts and your portfolio returns. This is exactly why we launched our TIP Mastermind community. In the TIP Mastermind community, we have nearly 100 passionate value investors joining our weekly live Zoom calls, sharing stock ideas, connecting with TIP hosts, joining our calls with special podcast guests like Chris Mayer and Gautam Bade, and most importantly, building lifelong relationships. We also host two live events per year in New York City and Omaha to take those relationships one step further. The TIP Mastermind community is exactly what I needed as an investor, so we decided to create it ourselves. Now I'm surrounded by so many like-minded investors who continually help me step up my game. We're capping the group at 150 members, so if you'd like to learn more, you can visit theinvestorspodcast.com/mastermind. That's theinvestorspodcast.com/mastermind. When Rainn Wilson had a great idea, he turned to AT&T Business. They assured him no matter how out there his idea may be, they had his back. So he came up with this, a talking pillow designed to put you to sleep, backed by a reliable network and the only network with built-in security controls. And thus, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. Kyle, you're connected with a ton of different investors and portfolio managers, and you're just really in the know on a lot of these things. How do you keep up with all the day-to-day headlines for your portfolio companies?
Yeah, so I used to have a ton of issues with this, and that was until I started using Yahoo Finance.
Really? What's so great about it?
So Yahoo Finance is awesome. I have my whole portfolio entered and I can easily see all the top headlines to keep up with the recent news. And each day you get an overview of the major global events that might be moving the market. So I'm ready to easily pounce on any opportunities that come my way.
What else can you do on Yahoo Finance's platform?
They also have a number of cool features, including a tool that lets you link all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings, and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts.
Well, now I know that the audience is really going to love this one. And I actually see they have 90 million monthly active users.
For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com.
The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
No. That's perfect. So back to this question. So do you think that the fact that people have the optionality to basically set up their own infrastructure and run it is the main thing that we need to ensure continues to exist, which it is with Bitcoin, that makes it so much different than the legacy financial system, which you don't even have anything remotely close to that optionality to run on your own? Does that prevent the attack vector of centralizing forces? Is that enough?
Yes. I mean, people are going to be able to run their own infrastructure and just reduce the trust that they have had in other systems. Let me share this story with you that we were processing payroll for Amboss, and we were thoughtful that something may be happening in the banking sector. Now, we're processing payroll and using a payroll provider. But what we didn't know was our payroll provider was banking at Silicon Valley Bank. And half a month's payroll had already left our account. And we find out soon after that Silicon Valley Bank has gone bankrupt.
Wow.
And has no funds. Now, what situation are we in right now? Do we just lose half a month's payroll? And not because of any fault of ours, but simply because we were using a vendor that was banking at this bank that until then I had never even heard of. There is trust in our payment system. And this was like happening automatically. And I had no worries about it before, but now I'm concerned about it. Now I'm wondering, is the FDIC going to step in and bail out my deposits, my payroll? Am I going to get that money back at all? Or are they going to devalue the money and bail out the banks like they did in 2008? This is the problem that we're trying to solve by creating a complete alternative to any trust-based financial settlement. And we can do that using our own infrastructure and by using Bitcoin, which can't be devalued in that same way as the US dollar or any other fiat currency.
Talk to us a little bit more about the existing centralized payment system, because I know you are pretty well versed on all the issues that it currently has. But for people that aren't intimately familiar with the nuances of these issues, and then what we'll do is we'll also talk about the potential issues of a decentralized payment system like Bitcoin and Layer 2. So let's go ahead and hit the existing legacy system and do a little bit of a compare and contrast.
So I've been reading this book called The Anatomy of the Swipe. And it goes into detail about, you know, what happens, you know, when you're actually swiping your payment card at a payment terminal. And you'll swipe your card, and then, you know, soon after you're going to see a nice check mark, whatnot. It says, oh yeah, transaction approved. And then, at least in the US, you're going to add some funds to it right after that as like a tip. And like the actual debit from your account is the original amount. But then you're stacking on this tip on top of it. And the actual settlement from that payment doesn't happen until like 45 to 60 days later. Now, during that time, like no money actually moves until much, much after that swipe period, you know, days, weeks, sometimes months. And during that period, while you're waiting for the actual settlement to happen, there's still a risk that the merchant, whoever sold you, you know, your meal, your goods, what have you, that they may not actually receive those funds because you're going to pull what's called a chargeback. Mm-hmm. And so you can just reverse that payment. All of the fiat payment system that we've become accustomed to is a debit system. So if your information on your debit card gets leaked, then someone else is actually going to be able to pull money from your account. Now, like that's the opposite way that Bitcoin operates, where every single payment is a push payment. So you're individually approving every time any funds leave your account or your wallet.
Any other issues that you'd like to highlight? I know that you've talked publicly about barriers to entry for competitors against like Visa and MasterCard and things like that. You already mentioned the counterparty risk there with the Silicon Valley Bank and oh lordy. But yeah, how about the barriers to entry?
Yeah. When we look at payment processors of the world, really there's three: Visa, MasterCard, American Express. And just Visa, you know, settles $5 trillion worth of payments every single year. So this is a massive industry, but Visa used to be a nonprofit and it is now a private company. It is using the same technology that was set up back in the 1970s. So there really hasn't been a whole lot of innovation that's happened in terms of payments. Yeah. So when you go to swipe your card, the merchant is actually going to pay about 3% of the transaction just to make that settlement happen. Now, on the consumer side of things, we've been enticed by the idea that we're going to get, you know, 1-2% cash back. So that's going to be money back in the account. But what we're not taking into account is the actual increase in prices just because of the inefficiency of the settlement system. So the prices that we're paying are being marked up by 3% or more just because of the fact that the merchant is actually going to have to pay those settlement fees and take on the risk that there could be chargebacks.
So Jesse, I want to get into some of the really interesting things that you guys are now doing at Amboss, which is providing a marketplace, this Magma marketplace for people to open channels for individuals, for companies, for whoever it might be that's wanting inbound capacity, liquidity. Walk us through how you guys created this open marketplace, what it looks like, the number of people that are actually using it. Just tell us everything you got.
We launched Magma a little over a year ago, and we allow people to just say how much they'll charge to take their Bitcoin savings and allocate them towards payment rail. And so that's what's being created is with the Lightning Channel is a new payment rail going to a new destination. So anybody that wants to start up a business and accept Lightning payments with their own node and their own infrastructure just goes on to amboss.space/magma and goes and clicks buy on one of those nodes. And they can also like review and determine whether that's a valuable node to buy a channel from. And depending on like the price that they're willing to pay, we'll get information about what's the value of liquidity that the market is finding. So you could price your channels very inexpensively, and then like we'll have a better sense of, you know, what's the cost of settlement from like continuously operating this new payment network. Yeah, this gives us a each of these channels that are sold for like a month, 3 months, or 6 months at a time, they'll agree to keep it open, and they'll also promise to keep their routing fees very low. So they won't pay, consumers won't be paying a transaction fee each time. So a merchant can go through and just buy one of those channels and set up a new payment rail to their business.
Teach people why this is so different than the existing financial system, credit-based financial system, with respect to risk-free rates and what this might potentially offer in the future.
When you're using a credit card, for example, that issuer is essentially loaning you the funds, and they're going to charge a high interest rate if you fail to pay. Instead of doing that, what we've created with Lightning is a way to simply take your Bitcoin and make it be used for payments. And when you're doing that, you're actually not giving up custody of your Bitcoin, even if you're the channel creator. So you don't have to worry about someone else taking your Bitcoin, even though you've just increased the utility of this new monetary asset. Now I can use this awesome store of value as a medium of exchange. And I've just set up that network. Now, I don't have to trust the other person, and I'm getting a yield off of it. So this is the first time that this has ever existed, is you can earn yield from your Bitcoin without having to trust any other party. Really, you just have to trust your own infrastructure that you've set up.
I'm going to put up a chart, Jesse, here so people can see what this looks like today. Describe this for people that are only listening to the audio so that they kind of know what we're looking at. But it, I mean, it's a yield curve. It's a, it, would we call it yield as far as, oh, you know, the financial definitions get tricky here because you're not giving up custody of the coins. It's almost like you're renting the liquidity. I don't know what the proper terminology would be, but anyway, over to you.
There's really no words for it. But instead of LIBOR, where you have an idea of like a reference rate for interest, what you have up is called what we're calling the liner, which is the Lightning Network rate. And this is a dual index. There's two pieces to it. So there's the liner cost, which is what does it cost a merchant to get set up with liquidity? And we can see that when we first started the marketplace, there wasn't a ton of volume. So it was up closer to 5%, but we watched it drop down to about 2% that folks were paying for that initial bootstrap of liquidity. If they're paying 2%, that means that they're saving an entire percent of their transactions versus a payment processor. Now, on the other side of things, there's the people that are using their savings to create a new payment network. And that's what we're calling the liner yield. So that's the green line, which is below the liner cost. And that actually shows that people can earn yield without giving up custody of their funds at any point. So people can earn up to what we're seeing is above 2% yield for providing liquidity to the Lightning Network. This is really where it comes together. Because on the one side, if you're a holder of Bitcoin, why aren't you using your Bitcoin to create a new payment network? And on the side of the business operator, why are you using a less efficient settlement method that uses credit and debt when you could use the Lightning Network and you could have instant settlement and no chargeback risk?
Jesse, I want to talk to you a little bit about the inscription stuff that's been happening on layer one. This has made the fees really blow out and get much higher. How has that impacted Lightning and channel management? Because anytime somebody wants to close a channel or open a channel, they got to do that on layer one, which has these high fees now. Just walk us through some of your thoughts on that.
By putting other things in the blockchain, everyone is essentially bidding to get into the Bitcoin blockchain and be part of this immutable record. When that happens, in order to like create a channel, you're going to have to bid a higher price to be part of the Bitcoin blockchain. And it's costing a lot to actually create this new infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Now, like despite the higher fees that are being paid, there's still an opportunity to earn yield by setting up this infrastructure. When folks are adding inscriptions, they're adding images and whatnot, and they're essentially stamping the blockchain. They're also doing that with new assets under this BRC20 standard. And consequently, there's been a lot more concern about, am I opening the channel, a Lightning channel, to the right person, or to the point where it's just saying, okay, this is a crazy fee spike. I'm not going to pay it a transaction fee that's quite that high. And I'll just wait until this hype, this mania is over, and then set up my infrastructure at a time, at some point in the future, when I think the prices for a Bitcoin transaction will be more reasonable.
Have there been any metrics? You guys are doing the analytics and the data on everything Lightning. Is there any metric or chart that you like in particular, or that you think is really representative of a certain idea?
If you pull up the order details chart on Emboss, okay, you can actually see this really significant gap in when we've seen magma orders happen. And that was quite recently with this like BRC20.
Oh yeah. Look at
excitement.
Is that right in here, Jesse? The start of May then.
It's just this huge like gap where there was essentially zero volume through our marketplace for Lightning channels because the network was just like, well, forget about it. I'm not paying that much. Like, can't I just wait to set up the infrastructure at a time when fees are much more reasonable?
I love it. Recently, there was this announcement down at the Bitcoin Miami about ARC. And this was an attempt. Well, I don't know if attempt is the correct word, but it's a protocol that's trying to remove this burden for inbound liquidity that we talked about a little bit earlier. It also has some privacy benefits. I'm curious what your thoughts are on ARC and whether you think that it's going to be something that actually catches on, or if it just kind of fizzles out and kind of goes away. What are you thinking?
I would like put this in context because, you know, Lightning was a white paper in 2016. And it's still early days, and it's 7 years later. ARC has received a lot of excitement recently, and I hope the ideas accelerate. But I think that's really the stage that we're at right now, is like the initial idea phase. it's being talked about quite a bit, this discussion about, is this the direction that we want to take a second layer on Bitcoin? And what does it mean for the Lightning Network? It sounds like Arc may be able to work with Lightning in a way, and using a shared UTXO model. Mm-hmm. It's still like early days to even understand what this thing is, although it's exciting to actually have potentially private payments and not have this inbound liquidity problem. One thing I'm curious about is the network effect, because, you know, with Lightning Network, you know, we've got now businesses that are set up on it and developers that have like different camps and are working on different aspects of it. Like it's a whole like flourishing ecosystem of development that's happening. And that might be hard to replace just because of the network effects that it has. Like this is when you go down to El Salvador, like people are using Lightning. Like that is like the method of payment that people have become familiar with.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey guys, this is Clay Fink. Before I became a host on We Study Billionaires, I hosted one of our other podcasts called Millennial Investing. Kyle Grieve and Patrick Donnelly have done an incredible job now hosting that show and taking it to the next level. For example, Kyle recently hosted an amazing episode with Chris Mayer on episode 310 that gave a masterclass on serial acquirers. Serial acquirers are a very interesting business model with very strong multi-bagger potential. This makes them potentially the dream business for stock pickers like us. Kyle also hosted some other amazing episodes packed full of timeless investing wisdom with guests like Lawrence Cunningham, Robert Hagstrom, and Brian Feraldi. Millennial Investing, along with We Study Billionaires, is definitely one you should add to your arsenal of top podcasts. Check it out today by searching for Millennial Investing on your favorite podcast app and clicking the follow button. Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet. But I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? For me, nothing beats having my next flight free thanks to NerdWallet. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
All right, back to the show.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's very, very early days. I mean, you're effectively at the white paper phase. Like, nobody's actually implementing anything on this protocol yet. The one thing that I found a little bit interesting or maybe a barrier to use is just the refresh. I guess there's a refresh that's required every 30 days for people that are using it. It almost seems like it might be a tool for larger companies or entities that are operating on Lightning in the future. Like maybe it's for them and not as much the end user, which is a little ironic because it almost seems like it's for end users to have immediate inbound liquidity. And it might not even be used by the retail or individuals in practical use, if at all. But I'm just curious to hear some of your thoughts on that. How about for a guy that's so close to Lightning, what is something that you think a lot of people are missing about the Lightning Network right now that you're excited about or you think is really important moving forward?
What I'm really excited about is enterprise adoption of the Lightning Network. And that comes in two forms. One, in just the formation of markets around Lightning. The fact that folks with Bitcoin holdings can start earning yield at very low risk without making the same mistakes that people made by allocating their Bitcoin into CeFi yield platforms. This whole system doesn't need to blow up and we can have cheaper payments. So that would be a win. And the second piece is after attending the MicroStrategy conference and having KPMG on one side of me and Fidelity on the other side, all done up in suits and getting palpably excited about the Lightning Network. Michael Saylor can essentially tip his employees for meeting their workout goals at work or showing up to meetings on time. And everybody in the room, like that I would never expect to be excited about Bitcoin and Lightning, are really excited about it. They're freaking out if they're going to be over a minute late to their next meeting because they would miss out on the sats that they would get. The other aspect is just new use cases. Mm-hmm. Nostr is incredible as a new social network and a social network protocol. Like, we can have just internet native payments that are just flying around. You know, I'm posting a meme a day on Nostr and people are sending me sats just like throughout the day. I check my phone. I've got a new notification from Wallet of Satoshi saying, you know, you just received 21 sats or 101 sats. Just sending me like a little LOL message with Satoshis that I can save as, you know, real money and use my node to convert to Bitcoin and I can move it to cold storage, what have you. The whole thing is exciting. It just really lowers the friction involved in payments.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. This past 12 months, everything just started to become very real. I know whenever I was just opening the channels earlier when I started using Amboss initially, like I was using Lightning, I was setting up these channels, but there wasn't really like any type of operational use case like out there. You know, you'd do like test transactions where you'd send a friend 100 sats or whatever, but there was nothing that was like real to it. But once you started using it on Nostr, seeing like what Michael's doing at MicroStrategy and just people are really finally starting to harness this idea that if there's no fees for even the smallest 2-cent transaction, and I can immediately settle those two things, it's kind of phenomenal what type of use cases are starting to pop out of that were never possible before. Streaming sats to listen to podcasts or whatever it might be. And I think we're just kind of just starting to hit the tip of the iceberg of where some of this is going to start going. So I'm with you, and I totally share that sentiment. Jesse, if people want to learn more about you, is there anything else that you want to hand people off to teach them more about Lightning or Bitcoin or Amboss? Fire away. Let them know.
Certainly read as much as you can. If you understand Bitcoin and you want to dive deeper and start to understand not only Bitcoin as a store of value, but Bitcoin as a settlement network and Bitcoin for payments, for global settlement. Yeah, I'd push them to pick up Mastering Lightning and start building, run a node, install ThunderHub, and start exploring on Amboss.
I love it. Jesse, this was a real pleasure, and thanks for making time to come on the show.
It's my pleasure, Preston. Thanks so much.
If you guys enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow the show on whatever podcast application you use. Just search for We Study Billionaires. The Bitcoin-specific shows come out every Wednesday, and I'd love to have you as a regular listener. If you enjoyed the show or you learned something new or you found it valuable, If you can leave a review, we would really appreciate that. And it's something that helps others find the interview in the search algorithm. So anything you can do to help out with a review, we would just greatly appreciate. And with that, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. To access our show notes, courses, or forums, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.